The Strait of Hormuz has been effectively closed for 5 months. That's roughly 150 days, during which somewhere between 20 and 21% of global oil trade, about 17 million barrels per day in normal times, has been choked off or dramatically rerouted. Trump said Tuesday that a deal could come within 48 hours, and senior U.S. officials are describing themselves as cautiously optimistic. At the same time, silver climbed sharply on Tuesday as Iran threatened U.S. warships still positioned in the strait, and Iran's president is publicly saying Tehran is not seeking a wider war even as talks resume. Sarah, those two things seem contradictory on the surface.
They're actually not. And this is where the internal Iranian political dynamic matters enormously. The president making diplomatic-sounding statements and the Revolutionary Guard making military threats are not the same institution expressing the same policy. The IRGC controls the strait in operational terms. They have the mines, the fast boats, the shore-based missile batteries. The presidency can want a deal in good faith, and the IRGC can simultaneously be positioning for leverage during the final negotiation. It's a classic two-level game, and it's been Iran's negotiating template going back to the original JCPOA talks in 2015.
The economic pressure on both sides is real. Iran's economy has absorbed 5 months of compounded sanctions pressure during a period when it was already under severe constraints. But the U.S. side has a readiness problem that Reuters made explicit yesterday. The five-month conflict has consumed virtually all of America's ATAPS and PAR-SM stockpiles. Those are the Army Tactical Missile System rounds and the precision strike missiles that form the backbone of U.S. long-range conventional strike capacity. We're talking about systems that take between 18 months and 3 years to manufacture in any significant quantity. Pentagon planners are acutely aware that a prolonged stalemate isn't just expensive, it's leaving the United States measurably less capable of responding to a contingency in the Pacific.
And that's the leverage Iran may be reading correctly. The Trump administration has strong domestic political incentives to close this deal before the midterm cycle fully kicks in. Energy prices have been punishing consumers for 5 months. A Hormuz deal gets announced, oil comes back online, gas prices fall. And that's a concrete economic win the administration can point to. The question is what Iran gets in return, and those terms haven't been publicly disclosed in any detail.
The silver rally is worth noting because silver isn't oil. It's telling you something different about where investors are parking money during geopolitical uncertainty. Silver is both an industrial metal and a traditional safe haven play. And when it moves sharply on a Hormuz story, it signals that markets are pricing in prolonged uncertainty rather than imminent resolution, regardless of what officials are saying publicly.
Jordan's warning this week about an imminent Israeli takeover of Al-Aqsa is also folded into this equation. Foreign Minister Safadi used the phrase, trigger a religious conflict across the Muslim world, which is diplomatic language calibrated to be taken seriously. The Hormuz negotiation is happening against a broader regional backdrop where multiple flashpoints are live simultaneously. The Gaza situation, the West Bank, now the Temple Mount, and any one of them can scramble the diplomatic math on the straight deal.
The 48-hour window Trump described expires Thursday. We'll be watching closely. What we know with certainty is that the deal, if it happens, won't resolve the underlying questions: Iranian nuclear capacity, IRGC influence, regional proxy networks. It will simply pause them in a way that allows oil to flow again. Whether that pause holds is the question that follows.
Lithuania's situation is a reminder of how the conflict's shockwaves travel far from the Gulf. Zircon hypersonic missiles, Russia's most advanced, with a reported speed of Mach 8 to Mach 9, landed meters from the Lithuanian embassy in Kyiv, with Lithuanian Foreign Minister Budrys saying there were no military targets in the immediate vicinity. The implication is deliberate targeting of a NATO member state's diplomatic compound. That doesn't trigger Article 5 automatically. Diplomatic premises are protected under the Vienna Convention, not the NATO treaty. But it escalates the symbolic stakes of the war in Ukraine in a way that Baltic state governments are going to be taking very seriously.
Zelensky's claim that Ukrainian drones killed over 30,000 Russian troops in July alone is staggering if accurate. Ukraine's drone program has become the most cost-asymmetric element of the war. Relatively inexpensive first-person view drones taking out armor, artillery, and personnel at a scale that a $2 million missile couldn't justify economically. If those numbers are even half accurate, Russia's manpower problem, which was already documented by Western intelligence, is getting measurably worse each month.
Japan's defense white paper declaring the country faces the gravest security threats since World War II is the third leg of this geopolitical triangle. Tokyo explicitly names China's military buildup, North Korea's ballistic missile program, and now the Russia-Ukraine war as converging pressures. Japan increasing its defense budget to 2% of GDP, a target it hit last year for the first time, suddenly looks not like a symbolic gesture, but like the minimum floor of a genuine rearmament.
The Tbilisi mayor's claim that NATO deceived Georgia on membership, coming just days after Ukraine's ambassador to the UK said Ukraine will never join the alliance, that's a remarkable pair of statements to emerge simultaneously. It signals a loss of faith in the alliance's expansion promises that goes beyond frustration and into something structurally damaging for NATO's credibility in the post-Soviet space.
The alliance was built on the premise that aspiring members had a genuine path to membership. If that premise is no longer credible, the deterrent effect of NATO aspiration, which kept several former Soviet states oriented toward the West for decades, starts to erode. Georgia's alignment choices in the next 2 years will be a direct test of whether that erosion is rhetorical or real.